Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The headlines from London. China blames local officials for outbreak as Beijing sticks to zero COVID plan. Subhead, Financial Times. Health authorities vow to boost vaccinations of elderly after widespread protests against restrictions. I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, to help me understand what we're witnessing in China now, mainland China, Urumqi to Shanghai to Beijing, to all the popular cities along the coast that are the source of the magical electronic devices we in the West depend upon for our daily commerce. Gregory, a very good evening to you. It looks spontaneous. Following the 20th National Congress, in which Xi Jinping was endorsed as the forever General Secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, had his rival predecessor, Hu Jintao, escorted oddly from the chamber and then asserted himself in a tour of the G20 rooms as the leader of a billion people, the rising power, the Chinese miracle. And then suddenly, zero COVID is endorsed again for certain cities. Urumqi, for example, the center of Xinjiang, East Turkestan, and Shanghai, the financial hub, even neighborhoods of Beijing. And yet, this time, there are protests, young people and others on the streets using their iPhones to demonstrate the protests. Now, we'd seen isolated protests at the Foxconn plant recently, but that had to do with being trapped inside dormitories with beastly conditions, inadequate food, because 35 people tested positive for COVID. Those streets of Shanghai and Beijing that we witnessed, and other cities, Wuhan, those were not workers of Foxconn being trapped inside their dormitories. Those were people in prosperous cities wearing really good clothes with their iPhones held up and blank pieces of paper. Is this different, Gregory? Is this different than what we've seen before protests in China, most recently about mortgages that people can't pay? Or is this the same as we saw in 2019 in Hong Kong? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the difference between the 2022 protests and the 2019 Hong Kong protests is that one could be construed as being local, Hong Kong being a small part, if you like, of mainland China, and could be ignored or set aside by the bulk of the Chinese population. What we're seeing today are problems which resonate across the country and which unite the people. So we haven't seen that sort of phenomenon before in the Chinese protests. There were 180,000 or so protests in 2010, which were fairly significant and were put down. We had the Hong Kong protests in 2019, which were put down forcefully. In, I think, 2014 or so, I think there were about 174,000 separate protests around the country. But they were all about issues which reflected local party officials, local government and the like, rather than these unifying national issues. So this is different. Now, we saw the, if you like, the small breathing space which was given to these new protests in the post-National Congress period, in other words, this month. And that was because Xi Jinping had literally put the country into a tailspin so that he could actively suppress his opponents, whether they were within the party or the security structures or whether they were in the general public. He needed to bring the country under control, and the best way to do that was through fear, through which is anti-corruption drives and with zero COVID. These enabled him to control large segments of the population on the basis that he was doing a public service. The reality was he wanted to firstly deny his opponents any chance to speak. He wanted to deny the increasingly wealthy urban populations the chance to voice their dissent either directly or through their purchasing means or through their ability to move in and out of the country and the like. All of that represented a major threat. And we saw in the run-up to the 20th Party Congress, as he, as I say, put the entire country into this terminal nosedive to shake off all of his opponents, which he did. But then at the end of the Party Congress, he needed to stop that nosedive so that the country didn't implode and also so that he didn't alarm the world community so much. So he then went on a charm offensive with firstly the Chancellor of Germany, then the Prime Minister of Japan, then the G20 summit, and then the ASEAN summit and the APEC summit and so on. In the meantime, by trying to pull the country out of its nosedive, he also indicated that he would somehow make things work with regard to the mortgage crisis and with regard to the zero COVID. But he had to maintain that zero COVID was a policy which was working and which was saving Chinese lives. Of course, it was not, and it was never anything about that. When he went into Xi'an, the large city where he was born, in December, January, for about a one-month period, he locked the city down, again, on zero COVID grounds. There were no COVID deaths, but there were 240,000 dead people at the end of that month, and they were all died largely of starvation and other illnesses because they'd been locked in their homes. We see similar things happening all across the country. So today, with this brief, if you like, a pause in the mass suppression, we've seen the public get out and express themselves. And it comes at a time when some of them will have been hearing about the Iranian protests, and equally the Iranians are hearing about the Chinese protests just after Iran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, hoping to be protected by China and Moscow from the West. So you're seeing all of these things starting to interact and get some kind of witch's brew boiling, which is across national boundaries. It's definitely going somewhere, and the next response has to be from Beijing, massive suppression on the scale of the Great Leap Forward or the Cultural Revolution and the like, which saw massive suppression in the streets. The question is how he will go about that and whether or not she will get further pushback on that.
You asked that hard question in your essay, Gregory. Unthinkable collapse of the PRC gaining credibility. Collapse of the regime, but collapse of Xi Jinping's leadership. So I think of the collapses of the dictators in the 20th century. Is this following a recognizable model? Because those protesters in the streets, some of them at least, were not chanting about COVID. They were chanting about Xi. They were mocking the general secretary. That points to the possibility that the Chinese people believe that solving him is solving their problems.
Absolutely. Well, any semblance of a social contract between the Communist Party of China and particularly its leadership and the population is evaporating rapidly. Not that it was ever a real social contract in the case of mainland China under the communists. But now we're getting to the point where we're seeing open expressions of hatred for the party and for Xi. And now we're also seeing the forms of protest indicating a contempt and a ridicule of the leadership. Now, this gets very dangerous for Xi Jinping, particularly because he has purged everybody else from the process, and literally he has to take responsibility. And what was singularly important was when he reformed the Central Military Commission after the Party Congress, He left out a lot of the key elements like the Air Force and the like, and basically the members of the CMC now built around Xi and ground forces in the People's Liberation Army and also the armed police and the like. So basically Xi has been thinking about his major battle to come, his major threat being the domestic population of the mainland China. And he's highly aware that the more urbanized the population of a country, the easier it is to mobilize mass dissent and demonstrations, which could turn violent at the drop of a hat. Because let's face it, Mao Zedong literally was a product of the urban revolt in about 1909, when the Dowager Empress died, and we saw the dissenting or disaffected migrant workers from the country in the cities of China expressing their anger at Imperial China, and that was when China was only 5% urbanized. And as we've discussed before, it's now about 67% urbanized in China. So it's very, very dangerous times for Xi Jinping.
And Gregory, just a note here, because we've talked about nuclear weapons before. Is it significant that within these last hours, we have this headline from London: China is set to expand nuclear arsenal to 1,500 warheads by 2035. This according to U.S. intelligence. Is that Washington responding to China, or is that China boasting? And does it connect to these protests?
Well, there's no question that China wants to be seen as a power which you don't want to mess with while it's going through its internal problems. So it definitely needs to get out and say, mind your own business. I've got all these nuclear weapons, and I'm getting more and more strategic capabilities. So don't interfere with our domestic affairs. Or there will be serious consequences. The reality is that even Xi Jinping knows that he is in no position to fight a strategic war of any meaning with a major power like the United States, largely because overnight the mainland China would have virtually no access to sufficient food. But the reality is that the People's Liberation Army are not a global force, so you'd either have to nuke all of the United States or use cyber warfare to shut down the electricity grids in the U.S. Either way, China loses because it needs the food which the United States provides. So unless you've got a Galtieri moment, in other words, if Xi feels so desperate that he has to act like General Galtieri, the Argentine leader in 1982, and look for a scapegoat and attack the Falklands, and in Xi's case, attack Taiwan or something, then basically, Xi knows that absent a major distracting operation, he has nowhere to go. So he has to try to hold the West at bay by talking about his prestigious deterrent nuclear capability while he gets on and basically locks down the entire country, even at the expense of its entire economy.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're going to turn to the front lines against the People's Republic of China's aggression. We're going to Australia. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batten.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.